Welcome to the Water Faucet Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Harmon, a professional engineer with over 45 years' experience in the drinking water industry. Join me as I answer your questions about what you deserve most: clean, safe, and abundant drinking water. Thank you for joining me for this first episode in the new year. A listener sent in the following question. I'm sure I know what sterilization is. Isn't disinfection the same thing? Isn't drinking water sterilized before we receive it? Thanks for your question, John. Despite what many people think, sterilization of water is not performed at water treatment plants. It would be prohibitively expensive to sterilize water on a large scale. We use what is known as a multi-barrier approach to protecting the public health. I'll explain what that is shortly. Also, if you prefer bottled water because you think it's sterilized, it's not. Again, the differences between bottled water and public water supplied water will be discussed in a future episode, and it will surprise you. Sterilization and disinfection are terms which can be confusing. That's completely understandable. Some people use them interchangeably, but they do have very different meanings when it comes to drinking water. Let's start with the one that most people believe that they know best. What is sterilization? You've heard me refer to the Water Dictionary in previous episodes. It is a collection of words and terms commonly used in the water industry. With something as complex as water treatment, we need to all speak the same language and use terms correctly. This dictionary is produced by the American Water Works Association and edited by prominent experts in the field of potable water. While some definitions might vary slightly from conventional dictionaries, the information in this dictionary focuses on potable water. The Water Dictionary defines sterilization as the process of destroying all forms of microbial life on or in an object by physical or chemical means. Sterilization could be accomplished by a variety of methods, including chemicals, heat, UV light, and others. The operative word here is all forms of microbial life. Presumably, the meaning is 100% of all living organisms. We know items like surgical equipment are sterilized to prevent post-surgical infections using a machine called an autoclave. It uses steam at 250 degrees Fahrenheit and pressure of 20 psi for at least 30 minutes to kill most organisms. Notice again, the operative word is most organisms. But true sterilization is very difficult and very expensive to accomplish, as the scientists working on the NASA Perseverance rover found. One of the goals of the mission was to look for signs of microbial life. It was imperative to prevent cross-contamination from biology originating on Earth. Cross-contamination is thought to have occurred on previous missions, where a positive test result for life was found. Therefore, literally 100% of all types of microbial life that had been on surfaces of the lander had to be removed. Sounds simple, but it wasn't. That's because life on Earth is so abundant and so diverse that it exists everywhere. Sterilizing all surfaces of the lander was more difficult to achieve than thought. One of the most difficult was the lubricants used on various parts of the rover, including sample collection system. Lubricants have to be sterilized to prevent providing a home for microorganisms. When a process was found that completely removed all traces of life on metal surfaces, our scientists found a problem. Some metal surfaces could be polished to provide what appeared to be a very smooth surface. Normally, these surfaces would slide across each other even without lubricants. But after being sterilized using a very sophisticated chemical bath, they would not move once they came into contact. What the best scientists in the world neglected to take into account was that even highly polished metal surfaces are not 100% smooth. On a microscopic level, these surfaces have peaks and valleys which can interact with each other unless a lubricant is used. What the scientists discovered was our atmosphere contains so much residual hydrocarbons that it forms an invisible microscopic film on everything. This nano-thick, invisible film acted as a lubricant that filled these microscopic irregularities and allowed the surfaces to slide even without traditional lubricants. By removing all of these hydrocarbons, which acted as lubricants, with this sophisticated process, and even these highly polished metal surfaces no longer moved. Complicating things is Mars is covered by dust, which can get between metal surfaces and act like placing sandpaper between them. Our scientists found a solution, so the rover went to Mars, and will collect samples for a return to Earth by a future mission. The moral of this story is, it is very expensive and very difficult to truly sterilize anything. If the purpose of sterilization is to prevent post-surgical infection, normal methods do a pretty good job, not perfect, but pretty adequate. But on a large scale, such as a water treatment plant treating thousands of gallons a minute, it would be very expensive. So disinfection is used instead. Disinfection is defined by the Water Dictionary as the process of destroying or inactivating pathogenic organisms by either chemical or physical means. A second definition is, in water treatment, the process in which water is exposed to a chemical disinfectant such as chlorine, chloramines, chlorine dioxide, iodine, or ozone for a specific period of time to kill pathogenic organisms. The key words here are kill pathogenic organisms. A pathogenic organism is also defined by the Water Dictionary. It is an organism that can cause disease in a host. So what does all this techno-water speak really mean? Disinfection is supposed to kill organisms in drinking water on a large scale that can cause disease in you, because your body is the host. The first thing you should notice here is that sterilization is supposed to kill all living organisms, but doesn't unless extreme methods are used. Disinfection is supposed to kill all organisms in drinking water that cause disease in human beings, but it doesn't. Water treatment plants and water delivery systems are designed to create a series of barriers to protect the public health. This is the multi-barrier concept I mentioned earlier. It is known that a single individual barrier, like chlorination, is not perfect and can let some pathogens through. By creating a series of barriers, the likelihood of pathogens getting through all of the barriers is significantly reduced. Therefore, the possibility of infection is significantly reduced, but not eliminated. We can see the same multi-barrier concept being used in other areas of public health, including the COVID-19 pandemic. Social distancing, washing your hands frequently, wearing surgical masks or wearing N95 masks, being double masked, getting vaccinated, and getting the booster. These are all individual barriers that make it increasingly difficult for the COVID-19 variant to get through all and infect the host, which is you. None of them are perfect alone, but when combined, are pretty close. In the early days of the 20th century, when chlorine disinfection was first introduced in cities like Chicago, 80% to 90% removal of pathogens was considered good. Chicago was in the grip of a typhoid fever and cholera epidemic that was killing one out of every 50 people. And they had tried other methods to reduce the infection rate. They reduced it substantially, but not well enough, until chlorination was introduced. Then these infections all but disappeared. Before chlorination, the only barriers to preventing infection was a clean water source. The fact is, everyone in Chicago disposed of their waste in the Chicago River, and it ended up in Lake Michigan. The reversing of the Chicago River on January 1, 1900 helped the issue, but did not solve it completely. It just sent all the contaminated water south and eventually to the Mississippi River. Finding a surface water free of organisms is virtually impossible. As we all know, Lake Michigan is constantly tested for microorganisms, and in the summer, the beaches have occasionally been shut down due to high bacteria count. As the effect of chlorination became known, many people refused to drink water unless they could smell the chlorine. Today, Regulations dictate a combination of barriers that result in a 3-log or 4-log removal of pathogens. In other words, 99.9% to 99.99%. However, 100% removal is still considered too expensive and not required to maintain the general public health except for those with severely compromised immune systems, thanks to the multiple barrier approach. We also know some non-harmful bacteria do get through the multi-barrier process. Sulfate-reducing bacteria is one that can be found in water mains. They can cause naturally occurring sulfates in the water to become hydrogen sulfide, which causes a rotten egg smell. They are anaerobic bacteria, which means that oxygen is as lethal to them as carbon monoxide would be to us. They live in the bottom of mains, where sediment collects over time. This slow collection of sediment is why your public water supply flushes water mains probably once or twice a year. They typically public notice when they're going to flush your mains. However, if you've ever been caught by surprise, especially when doing laundry, you know what can happen or what the water is like that is being flushed from the mains. So what does disinfection and the water treatment process really do? The combination of water treatment processes, such as rapid chemical mixing, flocculation, sedimentation, filtration, and disinfection, produce barriers, which reduces the amount of pathogens in your drinking water to undetectable levels, which means the likelihood of infection is extremely low. The term undetectable levels is used because some test results are lower than the lowest detectable concentration capable by the test instruments or the methods being used. Lab technicians making these measurements will record the results as no detect. Scientifically, they can't say the concentration is zero. They can say that it can't be detected. No one can say for sure that absolutely no harmful microbes or pathogens are present in your water, only that the concentration is so low that they cannot be detected. If you ingest the odd microbe or pathogen, the immune system of most reasonably healthy people can kill the organism before it can multiply and cause disease. It is only when we get dosed by a very high quantity of organisms, which can overwhelm our immune systems, that we get sick. Keeping the concentration of pathogens below detectable levels helps prevent possible infection. So let's talk about one more term, inactivation. It is a term used in drinking water treatment that came about after a watershed moment in water treatment and public health. The majority of the public had never heard of Cryptosporidium until an outbreak in Milwaukee in 1993. Milwaukee suffered the largest waterborne disease outbreak in documented U.S. history, even greater than the typhus and cholera outbreaks in the mid-1800s in Chicago. The Cryptosporidium protozoa infected an estimated 403,000 people and hundreds died. It appeared the Cryptosporidium oocysts breached the treatment and filtration system, leaving only the barrier of chlorination system. One of the revelations that came out of the outbreak was that only extremely high doses of chlorine and long contact times would kill the Cryptosporidium oocysts. Following the outbreak, many other types of disinfection chemicals were tested, including the use of ultraviolet disinfection. After a long evaluation process, UV was declared to be ineffective against the oocysts. The testing suggested the oocysts remained alive after what would otherwise be exposure to lethal doses of UV radiation. Luckily, some researchers continued thinking UV would work. What the new research found opened a new understanding of how UV works and how it could be used against Cryptosporidium and other similar waterborne pathogens. While the oocysts were still alive after exposure to lethal doses of UV radiation, the radiation had passed through the cyst wall and destroyed the DNA. With the DNA destroyed, the oocysts were still alive but incapable of reproducing. In other words, you could still ingest the oocyst from the water, but because it could not reproduce, it was incapable of infection and causing illness. Because the oocyst remained alive after exposure, disinfection was not technically the correct term, so the term inactivation was born. UV is now used in many surface water treatment plants to inactivate cryptosporidium and other infectious protozoa. UV in combination with ozone has been found to be effective to providing additional barriers in the treatment of surface water. UV disinfection, or inactivation, is used in both surface water and groundwater to provide additional barriers. Chlorine is still used to provide a barrier and to provide a residual in the water entering the water mains. So let's recap. Drinking water treatment includes a series of processes that form multiple barriers to prevent pathogens from entering the water that you ultimately drink. These multiple barriers include chlorination ahead of treatment, chemical treatment, followed by filtration, and post-treatment disinfection or inactivation. The combination of barriers reduces the concentration of pathogens entering our distribution system to a non-detectable level, meaning that possible infection or illness is extremely remote, again, except for those with severely compromised immune systems. I suppose I can't wrap up this episode without at least mentioning pasteurization. The Water Dictionary defines pasteurization as a heat treatment process originally developed to preserve wine by killing bacteria that could cause the wine to become sour. Pasteurization is most commonly associated with treating milk to destroy disease-causing organisms that can be transmitted by contaminated milk. These diseases include tuberculosis, typhoid fever, dysentery, diphtheria, scarlet fever, and foot and mouth disease. Pasteurization is not a sterilization process because it does not kill all organisms present in milk. What is the pasteurization process? Raw milk is chilled to 39 degrees Fahrenheit at the dairy. That temperature is maintained during transport until it reaches the processing plant. It is then rapidly heated to 161 degrees Fahrenheit by passing it between stainless steel heated plates or tubes. It's then held at that temperature for a minimum of 15 seconds, then quickly cooled back to 39 degrees Fahrenheit. It is then packaged and sent to the grocery stores where you purchase it. That does it for this episode. Join me in a couple of weeks for another journey into the fascinating and complex world of drinking water. Email me your questions to thewaterfaucetpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Harry Harmon for The Water Faucet.